Before the rush takes over, start your Christmas journey with Premier's Advent Moments interactive calendar. Open each door and step into the unfolding story of Jesus with daily challenges rooted in kindness and a verse that brings you closer to Bethlehem. You'll also receive short emails of encouragement to help you stay centered through Advent. Sign up at premier.org.uk/advent2025. Brought to you by Sat7 UK.
Lucas on Life.
Hello, you're listening to Lucas on Life. I'm Jeff Lucas, and in the last few days, we've been hearing a lot about two former friends and colleagues who have really fallen out and parted ways. I'm talking about Marjorie Taylor Greene and President Donald Trump. Ms. Greene originally went into Congress as one of President Trump's staunchest defenders, sworn into office just days before the 6th of January 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. Greene supported the president and echoed his contention that the 2020 presidential election was stolen when many in the Republican Party disavowed him. Now, 5 years later, Greene will leave Congress having been branded a traitor by the man that she once revered. Over the course of the last couple of months, Greene broke with Trump in the most dramatic and spectacular fashion. The spat began when she broke step with her former pal on X earlier this month. She said, "The American people aren't motivated by foreign wars or bailouts for other countries. They want leaders who show up, do the job, and fight for them every single day." So, how did the president respond? Well, first of all, he changed her name to Marjorie Traitor Greene. And being branded a traitor is a dangerous tag because she subsequently has received a number of death threats. Now, he's since softened his rhetoric slightly. In a brief recent interview, Trump told ABC News that Greene's departure from Congress was great news for the country, but he later posted on Truth Social that Greene went bad, but that he would always appreciate her and thank her for her service to our country. So he said. Greene said she will return to her home in Georgia and a new path ahead for her. And although she reportedly expressed interest in the state's governor race next year, she recently said that she would not seek that office. Now, fear not, because my purpose in this evening's program is not to pontificate on this specific situation. But this is yet another story of colleagues and surely in some cases friends who trusted each other and shared common purpose, who have now not only parted but have done so with bitterness and rancor. Some have suggested that President Trump may not actually believe in friendship in a traditional sense, viewing relationships more transactionally. One former associate described being friends with Trump as like being friends with a hurricane, alluding to the intensity and the challenges involved. So tonight, and then next week as well, let's talk about authentic, real friendship. And let's focus on the truth that real friends can help us see what we often don't see. And that's the truth about ourselves. Once upon a time, nearly half a century ago, five lads grew up in neighbouring streets in East London. More Essex boys than junior East Enders, they journeyed together from short trousers at the infant school through the pubescent awkwardness of secondary modern. They shared the same classrooms, love of Led Zeppelin, hairstyles, and even went out with the same girls, though not usually at the same time. They argued, made up, drank beer illegally, and spent 1,000 Saturdays kicking footballs around the park. They sat around and looked up at the stars and wondered if anything meant anything. Like most youthful friends, they always planned to be friends for life, but school leaving changed all that. They scattered into different directions to trek down different career paths, one a recording engineer, another a vice principal of a college. There was a BBC producer, and there was a health and safety inspector, and then a minister of religion. Yeah, well, that would be me. My drifting from the group was accelerated by my teenage conversion to become a Christian, throwing myself suddenly into church activities and then heading off to Bible college for ministry training. The little band of pals lost touch for 35 years, until a few years ago, Phil, Graham, Trevor, Steve, and I, we met once more. It was nothing short of wonderful. Finding one another through the mixed blessing that is social networking and media, we scheduled our reunion in a London pub. I've been looking forward to the meeting for months, and now, as I gingerly opened the door and peered around the crowded bar, I was looking for a group of 17-year-old chaps who are now much older, and anxiety momentarily mugged me. And then I was greeted by four broad, welcoming smiles. Recognizing the group, even after all those years, was easy. But there was one surprise encounter that I hadn't reckoned on. Within seconds, we were laughing out loud at the memory of some of our teachers. There was the chap who taught chemistry, who lectured us endlessly about laboratory safety, which was ironic, seeing as he looked as if half his head had been blown away by a mishap with a Bunsen burner. And then we remembered the French teacher, a staunch disciplinarian whose terrible breath could have controlled rioting crowds, and who spanked us by karate chopping our buttocks, which we didn't think was so strange back then, but then reflection made us wonder. And then we smiled wistfully at the mention of the gorgeous drama teacher. Her name escaped us, but we remembered her miniskirt rather well. Delighted to be together, we solemnly vowed not only to attend each other's funerals, but to ensure that a death would not be the prompt for the next reunion, arranging to meet again in just a couple of months. The evening we spent together was marked with great kindness and respect. I knew that I'd been a little too fervent as a brand new Christian, and I was concerned that they might view me as a friend turned religious fanatic, but I needn't have worried. "You had a life-altering experience when you were 17, Jeff," said my friend Phil. "Please tell us about it." I did, and they were kind enough to listen. As I recounted my story about coming to know Jesus, I nervously glanced around the table, trying to spot rolled eyes of mockery or shared glances of boredom, but I needn't have worried. And then came the encounter that I really hadn't expected, as a stranger that I barely recognized suddenly showed up. That someone was me, as I used to be. My friend Trevor said, "We were amazed when you got God because you were always the bad lad of our group." I learned that they'd started smoking because I, sadly, had led the way. They said that I was brave, which I think meant stupid, because I took risks and then they'd have to follow. And I listened wide-eyed as they told me their perceptions about my home and my upbringing. I'd always felt a little like an outsider. Now I realized that my acts of bravado might have been about needing to prove myself, and I wondered how much this little boy called Jeff had actually grown up. The cigarettes are long gone, but the need for approval persistently lingers. At last, the evening finished with hugs goodbye, and I boarded the train, thrilled to have reconnected with them and intrigued to have gained their insights about the me who used to be. Surely that's what veteran friendships can be, a mirror kindly held up before us, showing us what we cannot see in ourselves. Sadly, the criticisms offered by Marjorie Taylor Greene have not gone down well with President Trump. But friends, true friends, can show us our blind spots, our foibles, our strengths, and our screamingly irritating habits if we will just let them. If we scatter eggshells around us, insist that anyone who gets close to us will have to walk on them, then we'll never benefit from their insights. Perhaps our friends have some things that they're desperate to tell us, if only we would ask and ensure that we will not react, but rather respond when they share those things with us. Friends, they can introduce us to people that we've lost touch with for a while, like ourselves. We've been talking tonight about friendship, authentic friendship that is rugged, that can cope with conflict, disagreement, where we can actually tell people what they don't necessarily want to know, but give us permission to share. I've talked about it before, but as we've been talking about friendship, she certainly comes to mind. As a singer, she was a phenomenal success, packing out New York's prestigious Carnegie Hall. A chart topper as the best-selling artist for her recording company, she worked really hard for her success, hiring a renowned vocal coach to help her hone her technique. Her friends cheered her on, celebrating her unique gift. There was just one problem. You see, she couldn't sing. The subject of a film starring Meryl Streep and Hugh Grant, Florence Foster Jenkins was, according to historian Stephen Pyle, the world's worst opera singer. To add to that, Pyle said, "No one, before or since, has succeeded in liberating themselves quite so completely from the shackles of musical notation." Ouch. Apparently, oblivious to the fact that her audiences actually gathered to quietly mock her, she was consistently flat, sometimes off-key by as much as a semitone. With her poor diction, she massacred foreign language lyrics. But, undeterred, she kept on singing, while her friends sniggered behind their hands. Hers is a tragic, pathetic story, made possible because nobody loved her enough to tell her the truth about her. You know, something similar can happen in churches where genuine commitment to encouragement has distilled into hollow flattery, where we so want to cheer people on that we end up barking them up the wrong tree, nudging them to do what God has not called or equipped them to do. Someone preaches a fairly mediocre sermon and is promptly told that it was brilliant. And where the gifts of the Spirit are operated, a seriously dodgy prophecy is shared on a Sunday morning. The congregation-wide sense of anxiety means that everyone knows that the God of the universe most likely has not spoken, but for fear of crushing the would-be prophet, or worse still, offending him or her, everyone stays tight-lipped. The emperor's clothes remain unruffled. There's a greater danger of this when any kind of constructive criticism is viewed as negative or even divisive. We can all grow, we all need to grow as a result of authentic, honest, kind, and loving feedback. But nervous of being tagged as a dissenter, some people in our churches nod their heads and blindly affirm. Not only does this dilute the possibility of quality control, but it devalues the currency of genuine encouragement. When people are always told that what they do is awesome, but they are anything but, nobody really believes it when real gifting is affirmed. One day, the hapless opera singer Florence, she found out the truth. Following the Carnegie Hall event, the New York Sun critic was scathing, declaring that Florence could sing everything except notes. She was devastated, suffered a heart attack 5 days later, and died within a month. Who knows? Perhaps if someone had been a good enough friend, if someone had loved her enough to tell her the truth, she might have lived a little longer and a lot happier too. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, says the wise person in Proverbs. So, if we really love someone and we've earned the right to say what might be uncomfortable to hear but could be life-giving in the long term, then for God's sake, I mean that reverently, and for theirs, let's speak tenderly, but let's speak up. And then, of course, the reverse is true, because if we find ourselves on the receiving end of advice that we don't want to hear, remember that wounds hurt even when they're inflicted by the faithful, but when the initial sting subsides, we'll be glad that they loved us enough to tell us the truth. Here's Michael W. Smith celebrating the truth that friends are friends forever. You see, I need to offer a word of caution as we've been thinking about tenacious friendship this evening. And that is that we are not called to remain in friendship with the narcissist, abusive person who manipulates and controls us. And it might actually be that we come to a place where, while we don't harbor bitterness, while we do offer forgiveness, there might be a parting of the ways. I think that caution is really needed. That said, let's build authentic, deep friendships that are veteran friendships that will last us through the seasons. When I look around at my own life, my true riches are discovered not in money and stuff, we were reflecting on that just last week, but rather in family and in friends. And that includes friendship that causes me to hear the truth about me. See you next week.
Lucas on Life. Faith-filled finance. All major UK bank accounts. One app. Provision helps you see where your money's going and steward it in line with your values. Download now at provision.money and use code PREMIER to get your first month free. That's provision.money.